Right, so the title of this session is Anarchy Rules, and what I wanted to do was just say something about why we're doing this and what we're hoping to get out of it, and then explain what we want to do with the session, which is really to run a little kind of an experiment, if you're willing to take part, as a way of starting a conversation about rule-making and anarchism. So just to set the scene, I'm involved in a project which is it's called Constitutionalizing in Anarchy and Anarchist Politics. And the idea of the project is to think about the way in which anarchists frame their own practices, not just organize processes of decision-making, but frame those processes within particular kinds of rules, how they organize or how they use principles, how anarchists use principles in order to decide what's acceptable, what's not acceptable, what the limits of certain behaviours can be. Now, our intuition, if you like, is that anarchists don't really like talking about rules because anarchy is associated with flexibility and plurality and all of those things, all of which we agree with. But we also think that anarchy itself is a positive thing and can be explained to non-anarchists as a positive thing, as a way of getting non-anarchists to think about how they can self-organise and not be frightened of self-organising. Whereas the image of anarchy is actually it's completely the opposite. It's going to undo all of your securities, all of your safeties. Therefore, you have to accept the rules that are given to you, and you have to obey those rules at the risk of being punished. So that's what we're trying to do. We're trying to take anarchy out and say there are ways in which you can make rules that inform your self-governing practices, and this is actually a better way of thinking about how to organise than accept what's there. So that's the aim of the project. In order to do this, we could sit there and read all kinds of books and reflect on that and decide, what it is anarchy can do in terms of rulemaking. But we don't want to do that, really. What we want to do is to go to practitioners and ask them, or ask you, how you make rules. So how you use principles to generate practices, and how those practices inform what you think is the limit of what a rule is, what the rule will be for everybody, and how that rule might be revised in the light of future experience or practice. So our proposal is, we've got a little sheet, and we've got some pens, and we've got big bits of paper, and what we'd like to do is to hand out the sheet where we've got an example of a you can read through the sheet, an example of a failure of a rule in an anarchist context, to give you an example of why we think the rule is important. And on the back of the sheet of paper, we've got a little grid that we'd like to attempt people to fill in, or if you prefer, you can write on a big sheet and work in pairs or in groups, and then sort of stop you after about 10 minutes and then see what we've got and see what you think about the process of thinking about rulemaking as an anarchist. Is that okay? Yeah? Okay, so I'll give out the sheets. Would anybody prefer to work on a bigger piece of paper? I can just put those in the centre, you can help yourselves.
Well, we had a discussion together in the group. So I don't know how you want to do it. If one person from the group wants to kind of do a report back, or if people just want to jump in with what they thought was an important point in the groups, anything at all, you can just kind of, we'll just open it up and people can just speak up, or if you want to, you can put your hand up and you can speak. It's up to you. I don't know if anyone wants to start us off.
We ended up having quite a long discussion about a specific case. One thought on this that I'm not sure if we all agreed on, but maybe my thought on it, and maybe we all agreed on it, is that the first column might be a better title, principle/tactic. Because some of the things you'll have in it, for some people are principles and for other people they're tactics. And the kind of four things we've kind of ended up in this column are consensus, non-violence, freedom of expression, and right to self-defence. And, you know, potentially these tactics or principles, you know, can come into conflict with one another. So that's just, and but we spent most of the time talking about a specific case, which I'm not in the best position to talk about.
Shall I?
Yeah.
Right, I'll do the quick version. It's about consensus. It was about when... It was about if you give... If a group gives itself the right to reach a consensus on decisions and the way forward, then it gives... Then it sets up subgroups, like... I'm just going to chuck out some examples, like a squat committee. There's some people who go off and they're going to break a squat and they're going to set up a squat for some reason. And there's a treasury committee, they're going to go and do some fundraising. And there's a creche committee, they're going to talk about looking after children during a big event or whatever. Then those subcommittees then develop kind of power, and then they disengage the main group from having their own power, and then suddenly they're calling all the shots and saying, well, actually, you know, these subgroups are calling all the shots now, and the central group has suddenly lost the right to reach consensus. That was kind of... That's a real representation, isn't it, what I was saying? About going... Because it's going on in Indonesia. I don't know if it's fair to name this group in particular, but... And the case in point was that that's what happened with this group. The group had given these subgroups particular power and reached consensus and say, yeah, you have the right to set up these groups and do this thing. And then when there was an incident of abuse during an event and a man was asked to leave, and he did leave, there was a realisation there was no safe space policy, and then the subgroups were telling the main group that they had no power to bring in a safe space policy, or they had no power to ban anyone or ask anyone to leave, and it had to be done officially through these little groups at like AGMs and extraordinary general meetings and stuff, which was, in my opinion, was just silly. So it was all about that, really. It was a discussion about that.
So, I mean, one of the things that came out of it was that actually this group did have a constitution, but the constitution described what the relationship between the component parts of the group were, not the behaviours that were acceptable within the group.
Yeah. And down with constitutions, what I say.
Which is really difficult, isn't it?
Yeah. Guiding principles, I find, are much easier than strict constitutions.
Yeah, sure.
Well, it's come a lot of discussions, but okay, you mentioned something about that, about, you know, not... You're just having principles and processes without the need for kind of rules. Was that kind of what you were talking about?
Yeah, I think like just my experience of it is that you have an agreement that is reached through the group, through a gradual process of individuals aligning with the group and the group aligning with individuals, like a back and forward process, and those principles become really embedded in that organisation. And they then develop ways of working that fit in with those principles, and they're not necessarily rules, or they might be rules, but those rules are quite often in their kind of written form, or their constitutional form, quite often ignored until they're absolutely necessary. But generally that's quite an unusual case in which those rules become so necessary that the group processes don't work through a problem. Does that make sense? So I'm not sure about the idea of having rules, because I think that they're generally worked out through the process, and they change all the time until you come into the group and people leave.
I suppose rules can be abused as well, can't they? The rules themselves can be used to exploit a situation, to undermine somebody's genuine feeling of something not being done right. Can I just point out, you know, you mentioned about because they're popular lines, the non-violence and right to self-defence. I always find that one interesting because they're in conflict with each other.
Potentially, yeah.
Yeah. well, the only way you can defend yourself, well, okay, it's not to be, split hairs here, but self-defence, is it violence to disarm someone? Is it violence to hold someone down?
We had a very similar back and forth on the same theme, actually. So quite early on, you posited non-violence as a possible sort of foundational anarchist principle that might be used to generate rules. And if this is a fair assessment, I disagreed on the basis that many historical and current significant anarchist groups and movements have explicitly endorsed violence, and in some cases have actually existed to cause certain types of organised violence. So, not in a particularly disparaging way, but just descriptively. So we actually managed to narrow it down. We thought that perhaps internal non-violence, so non-violence between members of anarchist groups, is something that we might find is typically expected in such groups, but that couldn't necessarily be written large to the group's interaction with external actors like the state or capital. Because, non-violence is, I suppose, it springs to mind as a sort of general principle that's quite popular in anarchist circles, but when we examine the history of the Spanish Civil War, huge mass movements of anarchists organised themselves for violence as a number one priority, defensive violence maybe, but violence nonetheless.
It's interesting as well, though, because the reason they did that in Barcelona or wherever is because of the violence coming at them.
Yeah.
So really, it's we want non-violence, but if you're going to be violent, that breaks the non-violence principle, and therefore all bets are off, and we can organise. Same with cops in Seattle or Prague or Greece or wherever. It's like, whoa, you're bringing riot cops in the area, you're beating up people with batons.
So we're going to go to the station before you've got to come out with the batons.
The interesting thing is that breaks the non-violence principle. So it's not necessarily the anarchists breaking the non-violence. It's the state or capital breaking it. So it's like, well.
But then strategically, you don't want to just sit and wait to be beaten up, do you, before you start to fight back?
Well, that's when the arguments in anarchism, you didn't need to go and attack that cop shop, those individual cops weren't doing anything. But, and that's where it gets a bit hairy. But I just think when you look at it, like, historically, they have organised and quite well sometimes as well. Usually because violence is coming their way, and that breaks the principle of non-violence. Externally, it breaks it.
I mean, this leads us on to something that we spent quite a lot of time talking about, which is sort of the relationship between rules and language. Because I was thinking, the classic argument for self-defense and what we would describe as violent acts, punching people, property damage, etc., we describe them as violent today, but actually the word violence comes from the sense of violation. The argument is that if you're responding to somebody violating you, then you're not necessarily violating them, or you're not violating them to the same extent in the same way. And I think we spent quite a lot of time not talking about violence and non-violence so much, but race cars.
We're talking about the language of state or society uses and the rules and the do not and the, as opposed to the do.
Uh-huh.
Express yourself. Yeah. Do have passion, and that's everyone's right. And so we really talked around about the way that we use language to support each other as opposed to put each other down. Is that sum up what we were doing?
I think so.
Is there a way that you can express prohibitions in that positive way as do? Well, so I was thinking about the violence one. So if you were going to try and turn a rule of non-violence into this kind of empowering language of doing.
Yeah. Well, the word aggression is about the ability to go and meet the thing outside of yourself.
Yeah.
As an example, on a particular site, situation where some violence was pending on offer, certainly suggested by a bunch of people. And what I did is, because everyone got to a little point where they were just a little bit panicky and not sure what to do, they were afraid. I think some were afraid of getting hurt, and some were afraid that if they fought back, that they'd get into absolutely massive trouble and the consequences would be awful. And what I promoted in that situation was that you don't need to think about rules to defend yourself. You have the right by nature to defend yourself, and you will not only you have the right, but as a group of people together, you must defend yourself, because actually the preservation of that group of people is at risk. So if what you do is you get some people that, now you understand people being afraid or having some different moral code, whether it's one that's written or whether it's one that's just, you know, through life that's just involved, don't want to take part in that. But they, I think there is a joint social responsibility in situations where, how do you, sorry, it's still. I suggested earlier chicken and egg situation is a really difficult one.
Sorry, you want to?
I think it's interesting that you're using the term rights there, and maybe this first column should be principle / tactics / rights, because, you know, we also ended up with freedom of expression, and that, is that more of a right than a principle? I don't know, but you talk about a right to self-defence. You wouldn't talk about the principle of self-defence.
And responsibility.
Yeah, the reason we didn't use right is because right is often associated with law.
Right, it's a very liberal.
So I thought that would upset the kind of
law.
So it's really interesting to think about how right can be reclaimed, if you like.
Right by nature, that's a good phrase.
Maybe then just abandon that language, because, you know, the language of rights is incredibly problematic.
It is.
It's very individualistic. It's, you know, it's very liberal. And, you know, there's huge problems with it. And I don't think it's necessary to use that properly. I think it's good that you avoid it, because it is a problematic language, and we can still get the concept across of, you know, use various other alternatives for your column of principles, and what was your other ones?
I think the idea of a right existing. The idea of a right existing in nature is a very interesting thing that you've just proposed there and that you've just mentioned. Although I'm not sure I really understand what it would mean. I mean, it seems like for a right to exist in nature, you have to believe in some very abstract property sort of inhering over us. You know, there's a sort of moral reality in the universe that's out there. No?
I think it's measurable by... Sorry.
I mean, I think when we talk about natural rights, I know this is slightly a tangent, but the idea of natural rights in and of itself comes from specific rights. And then when you consider the concept of nature, how we construct, imagine, create nature as outside of ourselves or within ourselves, I mean, it opens up another sort of quagmire for us to consider. And I think what's interesting, just looking at the concept of constitutionalism that I sort of brought up within this group, is that I wonder to what extent constitutionalism suffers from the same problem as rights or natural rights or nature, simply because the idea of constitutionalism in our sort of political and theoretical language necessitates the rule over. Mm. It is an idea about governance. And when you think about anarchist politics and anarchist organising, regardless of whether you think about anarchist organising in the contemporary moment or historically, the idea of coming up with a constitution, the idea of coming up with a set of guiding principles, when you have the idea of governing over, a lot of the time, and I think of contemporary movements as being a prime example of this, you end up recreating the systems that you wish to take apart. And I mean, one thing that comes to mind as being particularly interesting is, for example, the way the sort of carnivalesque resistance, that was their own sort of term, of Occupy,
yes.
And the call to just dance, and actually it draws on Emma Goldman's idea of anarchism being about dancing and self-expression, and that's the idea of being able to move in that way. But when you think about how it manifested in the politics of Occupy, it was in effect the creation of a subculture or a very small space that was only available to a very small amount of people that didn't actually take on the system that they were supposed to be taking on. So when we think about constitutionalism, sorry, I know I've overspoken, but when we do think about constitutionalism, I think it brings us to a slightly deeper question about how individuals relate with each other within a group, and how a group can create a set of guiding, well, for want of a better word, a guiding set of guiding principles, how individuals interact with each other. If, for example, we take the principle of anarchism to be autonomy, and as at the same time being very cognizant of the fact that autonomy is something that can be interpreted in multiple ways. I mean, take anarcho-capitalism as an example.
So I suppose we were trying to think of it in terms of how does a group constitute itself.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So I mean, all of these languages are problematic. I mean, governance is problematic. But if anarchism is about self-organising and self-government, then it is also about self-constituting.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's a question about, so how do you... And that was the example that was so good here. How do you then keep in touch with those rules so that they don't take on a life of their own?
Can I just say as well, this group wasn't an anarchist group. There were only a few of us that identified ourselves as anarchists, and we were trying to support the group to become more like what they said they'd set out to be, but they'd had this, well, in my opinion, really archaic constitution they'd downloaded off the internet in like 1991 or something, and just copy and pasted their own group name in it, and then kept it verbatim without changing it at that. So I just wanted to point out that they weren't anarchos.
Something that it's sometimes I miss the obvious, but I've kind of got something obvious now. It depends on function as well. We say rules. I mean, I've mentioned before that in different circumstances you've got different priorities. If you're just in the garden with your kids and your partner, and you just, not that that has to be the only model of life, obviously, but like, you're just there relaxing and you're having some dinner and there's no shortage of food. The idea with the rules doesn't seem to be that vital.
Mm.
But if you're on an activist camp and the food supplies are limited and there's not much firewood, you need to organise yourself, the rules kind of change a little bit. If somebody is going into an area where there's war taking place, it's like, for example, telling somebody they can't drink. If you're in a certain situation and you're smoking loads of spliffs and having a few brandies, you might be a liability to other people.
Mm.
You might actually be better, who knows? But the thing is in some circumstances, if somebody's just relaxing at home, you tell somebody, oh, no weed, mate, you can't smoke the weed, so what's the problem?
Mm.
So function rules with the circumstances of function.
Ruth, in terms of what you were saying about the question of self-constituting, and also with reference to what you said about a constitution being up to date and how does it keep up to date? How does it? So quite early on, I identified what I think is probably quite a banal instance of a principle turning into a rule. But in terms of how constitutions are made and maintained by anarchist groups, it's the principle of direct democracy. So to me, that's a fairly non-controversial example. Where the principle is direct democracy, this ideal of self-governance, and that's translated into quite specific, quite precise rules for how decisions might be made in advance. So, for example, a key principle of direct democracy might be that decisions shouldn't be made by elected representatives or proxies who've been installed with executive power. So that, in implementation, that might mean that members of the group vote sort of in advance, you know, or on the fly on a specific issue rather than electing representatives. So, I mean, I guess that's a very concrete example of how a principle translates into a rule and then influences the structure and set of behaviours of the group. And I mean, there are anarchist groups in many cases that do have constitutions,
yeah.
And they're created and maintained on that basis. So through some form of directly democratic procedure, a set of constantly updating rules and regulations which contain whatever the members want or think is relevant is maintained, and bad bits are taken out, good bits are put in. So I know that's not the most exciting
I think it's important, but I think that you could also read back from that. So presumably you would also ask, as an anarchist, what rules would need to be in place for direct democracy to work? and be able to protect itself. Because you could have direct democracy in a bank. You know, at the higher echelons of a management structure. Mm. But that's not what's meant, is it? There's something else that's going on that underpins it. And it's teasing out all of these sorts of relationships. So, I mean, the example I was thinking of, so what, I mean, one of the things that started the project going was the attempt in Iceland after the banking crisis for the people of Iceland to rewrite their constitution. And one of the things that was said about the exercise was that one of the problems that the crowdsourced framers of the constitution had was that they couldn't think of ways in which they could write rules that were going to protect them from the very power imbalances, those asymmetries that had been behind the banking crisis, been behind the financial collapse of the country. And so they were all signed up to the idea of democracy, but that was kind of written into their constitution already, and that was what the problem was. They couldn't, you know, so we've got it on paper, it looks great. There must be some other kinds of rules that we're thinking about in order to make those things that we want to hold dear operate for us in ways that we want them to operate. Oh, yes, sorry. Well, do you want to...
No, no,
do you have time?
Yeah, fine. I'm just saying we do need to...
Yeah.
I think if anyone else wants to come in, I mean, I don't want to speak twice in a row, but...
I mean, I guess the only thing I'd add to that is that some of those rules have to be rules of logic, of epistemology, ontology, knowledge and reality, sort of. So one of the things I brought up in group was... this sort of the liberal idea of human nature underpinned by the social contract is that we're all terrible, terrible people. And the only thing that stops us from raping and murdering one another is that we have a state that polices us and threatens us. And it seems to me that challenging that with ideas of sort of mutuality, solidarity, those underlying ideas also go into the realm of what people are, what knowledge is. And unfortunately, that requires you to get very vacuous and very vague to create sort of quasi-rules that govern an immense plurality of situations. Mm. But I'm not sure if that's not the best we can do if we don't want to recreate the excesses of liberal states.
Last one?
Very quickly, if I may. Just to go back to what you were saying, James, and also what you were saying about how a group constitutes itself. So when we think about direct democracy, I think one, based on what you're saying, interesting question to ask is, how do we create a space in which we can begin to
That's
create
right.
democracy? So let's say you have a group of anarchists who decide that they want to campaign against, tea bags, random example. Who are the people coming together to be at consensus with its advantages and disadvantages, be it 50 plus one with its advantages and disadvantages, all the sorts of voting methods and systems that exist. I think there's this sort of underlying question of when a group of people come together, how do you create democracy, and what does the coming together of, let's say, three people start up this anti-teabag campaign? Who are those three people? What is their baggage? I mean, I hate to bring the baggage. That was unintentional. And I hate to sort of bring in the identity aspect of it, but also thinking about how these three people interact as a microcosm of broader society, and how democracy can be constituted with, let's say, Bob, Brian and Jim, who are the anti-teabaggers extraordinaire who start off the group. And then as the group grows, how do you then reconstitute your democracy at every step of the way? What sort of principles that existed at the very beginning when the first teabaggers started their campaign, how are they challenged by later joining anti-teabaggers?
Mm. That's right. Which is part of the problem, or part of the issue that came up in the discussion here. Anyway.
I've written nothing on the piece of paper.
It's absolutely fine.
It's all right. You can keep the piece of paper.
I see there's a contact sheet coming round because... this is just the start of this project we're doing, trying to start this conversation about principles and rules and constitutionalising. So if you are interested in following it and being part of any future workshops. We'd like the idea to come back to Sheffield maybe in the next couple of months to kind of do a follow-up to see, well, based on this discussion, how can we kind of take it forward to kind of, you know, think about it in more detail. If you want to be part of that, leave your email address. There's also a website you can look at, anarchyrules.info. So you can have a look there. We'll post any details there. So if you don't want to leave your contact details, you can check the website. Yeah. Hopefully we'll put some notice on the Book Fair website as well, and the media, that kind of thing. So.
But if you are happy for us to take away anything you have written on, and you subsequently decide you don't want us to have it, then you'll have the contact sheet and you can just ask us to destroy it and we will.
Yeah.
I don't mind you having that book. Can you not name the group?
Absolutely not.
Yes.
I mean, I won't.
just out of interest, how many people have kind of thought about these issues around rules and rule making and rule following?
All the time.
Ever, so it's
like every day.
Yeah. Was there anyone who had never really thought about it until they saw the programme for the workshop?
Well, I do a lot of work around constitutions and things like that, but not so much in the anarchist the cooperative movement parallel.
Right.
So I've got a parallel.
Yeah.
We're interested in all of that too. Thank you. Thank you very much.
Thank you.